Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of The Pog State. We are up to episode 3. Mm-hmm. Oh, how the time flies. It's been 6 weeks since our first episode, and we have just gotten so good at this show. So incredibly good. You should probably go over to Apple Podcasts and give us a review of 5 stars. Only 5 stars. Not allowed to actually give your accurate opinion of the show if you don't like it very much. Leave a review. And we've got to get to new and noteworthy, apparently. That's how you're supposed to make it in the podcasting game. So that's okay. What we need to do. Can we be new and noteworthy? Am I too old for that?
What do you? I don't even know what that is.
All right, good. Great. So we're both boomers when it comes to how to do podcasts.
Okay.
Great. That's fantastic.
Not a big deal.
Shows that we're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Perfect. I'm Atlas. This is LS, as you guys know. I know you can only see half of his face, but we do need to add that the coronavirus is still a big deal, especially over here in Korea. We are, you know, we're a peninsula off China. China's struggling with this coronavirus thing pretty big time right now. So it's scary. We're taking as many precautions as possible. May not be wearing my mask, but I do have one, right? Wear it to and from work. You got a big commute, though, so life must be pretty tough for Mr. Gloves and Mask over
here. It's pretty bad. It's almost 2 hours.
Oh, my God.
Depending on if I miss trains or not. And, yesterday was one of the most stressful experiences that I've ever had in Korea.
Wow.
On the train, everyone coughing and sneezing, and I'm moving carriages.
Yep.
And then there's lots of people without masks on, which... I'm aware that...
I noticed that yesterday, actually. People... normally in Korea, I notice that there's, like, everyone's wearing a mask, even when there isn't the coronavirus.
Yeah.
And now, I see that one guy that's not wearing a mask, and I'm like, oh my God, how can you do this?
Yeah, so...
Which is weird, because that's... I would have been that guy, you know, beforehand.
I know that this mask doesn't prevent you from getting it, but it prevents anything from, like, being spreaded, or it
Well, it stops people from being able to get their spit into your face very effectively.
I suppose.
That's the thing.
Yeah, so...
And that's how it spreads real good.
I got a lot of tweets about that. I talked to various people in regards to, like, different grades of masks that are necessary for this virus. And a lot of them are available to get imported here. But generally, you can't just go out and buy them. I don't know.
Yeah.
So...
Well, let's just hope that it just passes us by. We're going to be okay. Mortality rate is still very low.
It's under 1%.
It is definitely a small one. However, getting the flu is bad, especially when it's this, because, you know, we need to be on the LCK, and we can't do that if we're quarantined for months because we've got a coronavirus, if you want to say it correctly. Anyway, let's move forward. We need to add the disclaimer. This is, of course, not representing the thoughts and feelings of Riot Korea. This is just me and LS telling you how it is on this show. Ian's probably going to do that big spiel of stuff. He can go right ahead. You guys can pause and read it if you actually give it. I mean, if you actually care about that. And now I want to go into some of the feedback that you guys had. I think we got probably some of the best feedback for our last episode, and that was... It's too short, and we want more. And
it's not actually short. We record a lot, but it got cut down.
Yeah, and we made a conscious decision to cut it down, especially for the video portion, because we wanted to see whether the bite-sized chunk would be a little bit more digestible in a YouTube format. Turns out that was wrong. So hopefully we can sit around here for a little while longer and give you a little bit more of the Pog State for this particular episode. That's the plan. There was some other feedback as well coming in, which was that, you know, we've been talking mainly about drafting. And yes, the drafting in the first 2 weeks of the LCK needed to be discussed. We were projecting that things might be bad, then they were bad. So we wanted to talk about getting that right. But what we wanted to focus on a little bit more, and we've listened to what you guys have to say, is to maybe branch out away from the LCK, have conversations on a little bit more broader topics, things like that, whether it be League of Legends related or just here in Korea related or just us related. Who knows? That's sort of the plan here as well. And it's not going to be a drafting or LS molding about draft podcast, because that sort of puts us in a box and no one wants to be in that box.
What?
The sandbox.
Not the sandbox. Let's stay away from the sandbox.
Although, to be honest, they drafted relatively well last night, and they just got smashed.
Summit got put on Soraka duty, and that just did not That did not pan out that well.
Yeah. So that's the extent of our draft discussion that we're having today. That's our draft discussion. We nailed it. That's it. Okay. We will move away from that particular one. Just to let you guys know, you can follow us on Twitter. I'm AtlasTV. This is LSXYZ9. And also, the Pog State has its own podcast at Pog State, where you can get all of the episodes, little trailers, updates, everything. If you want to hear from Ian, you want to chat to him. He doesn't have a Twitter, so it was really annoying. Everyone was like, "Oh my god, I love Ian. He's so cool." And I don't know his Twitter. So you could just use the Pog State Twitter in order to get in contact with him and tell him how awesome he is. That's what you can do if you'd like to. You can also reference James, our director. Like, you could tell him that he's also great, but I don't know whether he does anything, to be perfectly honest. Do you know? Does he do anything?
No, I don't think so.
No. Well, he's sitting over there. He's not defending
himself. He's an idea. He's not, you know.
He's an idea. He's a theory.
Yeah, he's a theory.
All right. It's actually, the theory of James. Yeah.
Does he exist?
Well, look, obviously, I don't know.
Yeah,
he's
exactly.
He's being very quiet at the moment because he values the integrity of the show
exactly.
over the integrity of defending himself.
Yes.
And so we're really taking advantage of this particular moment way too much. So let's get into it. I'm going to give you guys a little bit of a preview of what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to go over some of the happenings in the LCK, sort of a brief rundown of what's gone on. We're going to have a brief discussion of upcoming patches and what we've experienced on 10.3 at the moment, and we're going to have a bit of a talk about psychology in League of Legends. I really wanted to talk about this because you and I both, LS, have struggled with depression in the past and had, dealt with anxiety and the stresses of being a commentator. You've also been a pro player, and being a coach as well, I think, is really going to give us a little bit of insight into how a lot of our players have been performing, because I think week three was a big one when it came to tilt in the LCK.
Also, week three, week four, these are the weeks where teams that are just consistently losing, it gets really hard to turn things around.
Yeah.
And it can really affect the mental state, obviously, in the atmosphere, ultimately, of the team house. And generally, it's even probably a little bit more problematic in Korea, because mental health, until the last couple of years, it's a lot more taboo.
Yeah, the stigma is still there.
Yeah, there's still... I remember when I first got here in 2011... and I was living at a StarCraft Pro House, MVP's Pro House. And I remember talking with the coach about what do people do when they have depression and anxiety. Do they go to doctors? Do they go to psychiatrists or anything? And he basically said no, and he laughed and thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And basically said that they just try to read about it and improve their own mental health. And we know that that's not a very good recipe. Yeah,
that's called the toughen up mentality.
Yeah.
Which, that's not how it works. That doesn't lead to a healthy lifestyle.
In the last couple of years, I do believe that more psychiatric care has begun popping up in South Korea. I know that there's a lot of dual language, so Korean Americans, psychiatrists that now operate in South Korea, and also obviously psychiatrists from other countries as well, from Europe, and all over. So I know that it's starting to become more common. I don't believe that like sports psychologist is a thing in Korean teams, and so I know that a lot of them are exercising now. A lot of pro teams go to the gym together, which I don't know how popular that was back in the StarCraft 1, StarCraft 2 days.
No.
But psychology or mental health is a really important thing. Like you mentioned, I mean, I think you told me that you sort of overcame depression. I still struggle with it on a daily basis. I was diagnosed.
I've learned how to manage it.
Yeah. I was diagnosed at 17 with dysthymia. So it's like chronic depression that just keeps persisting, and it ebbs and flows, sort of like the tides. Some days or even weeks are way harder than others, and it's really rough.
I don't think depression is ever something... It's not something you get over. It's something you deal with. I think it's something that you manage.
Yeah.
And you have to find like a way to get over it, and not necessarily... as in, like, get over it, as in you're getting over an ex-girlfriend or something
like that.
It's get over the fact that this thing's in your way and try and get past it and live with it being yep. there in your life, and not, and try to mitigate its damage as much as possible. That was where I sort of got to. But I think when you get to that point and you realize you can achieve success around it, it, you know, it gives you a little bit more of that empowerment. But before that moment, man, it is utterly crippling.
Yeah. Obviously, it's not as bad as it used to be. I know that there's a lot of players in regions that struggle with mental health problems. Like, I talk to a lot of EU and NA players behind the scenes, and mental health is a real struggle. So I can only imagine what it's like in Korean teams. Obviously, I coached a Korean team before.
Yeah.
And mental health is pretty important because implosions can just happen. And in Korea, they call it like mental boom. But
yeah,
it's a really serious thing. And then because Korean players tend to give up a lot more than EU or NA players, because also secondary leagues in Korea, or challengers, gets a lot less than national leagues in Europe as well as NA. They do not make a lot of money. And there's a stigma in Korea on age, where if suddenly you're 19, 20, you might even be too old in some coaches' standards. Idiots. Yeah. Anyways, so there's a problem dealing with that, where Korean players start getting very stressed about their age, about military coming up and all this other stuff. There's added pressures. And if they give up going to university, or if they have family troubles because of this, they're much more all in on the game than other people, peers their age.
Yeah,
and they also, they all have of pressure, that just comes together.
They have pressure to perform at a specific time as well. So every loss feels so much more impactful, because it's not like, oh, I can come back tomorrow and I'll win then. It's like, no, I have to win today in order to qualify for this new team, in order to show that, you know, this player that's in my solo queue game can go and talk to his coach about this so that I might be able to get a shot at, as a, in a trainee position. I think, like, you're exactly right that the pressure is really, really high, but that actually sort of resonates back to Korea as a whole, right? Like, Korea, known for its education system and very high pressure and a high level of achievement on, like, the average level, right? Like, just the average Korean and how much harder that they work in an educational standpoint is staggering.
Yes.
Like, I came over here and I felt like the laziest person in the universe.
Yeah.
Because, you know, in Australia, we're just hanging out with our mates and, you know, one day maybe we'll do like a year 12 exam study session and then just go and do our exams. And if we fail, our parents are like, well, I still love you, but I don't respect you as much, or something like that. It's not like you're going to get kicked out or, anything like that. Like, the pressure here in Korea is just so much higher. And, like, your parents almost rely on you as a Korean to make them look good as they're growing older. There's this, like, added expectation. And all of these expectations, as we've illustrated, can build up and build up. And then you have, you know, players even in the LCK that snap and flash a Baron Wall.
Well, I don't think that's what happened.
Might have jumped into a conclusion a little bit.
But
you know what I mean? Like, that's what I'm sort of referring to, is that we don't know, like, when things happen in a game of League of Legends, it might be based on all sorts of different factors.
Yes.
But I think that it's worth discussing the possibility that these players could be going through some really tough times, and we need to be able to celebrate the players that are able to overcome. I think Nogri is a great example of a player that can get hard camped and destroyed and just never seems to tilt. He still makes odd decisions, even if he's behind, but he doesn't play like a different player, even if he's losing.
Yeah.
We saw that yesterday, and his Aurelia completely popped off. So yesterday or the day before?
2 days ago.
Yeah, 2 days ago.
Yeah.
I'm getting a little bit messed up. And of course, this is going to be releasing a little bit later, and so therefore, for you guys, yesterday could mean anything.
It could,
probably means Monday.
Yes.
Yeah.
There's no LCK on Monday.
No, there's not.
Yeah.
But the POG state's on Tuesday. In some countries.
Mm-hmm.
Not all of them.
Not.
You know? You got to really stay up there. I got a little bit sidetracked after sort of throwing Deft under the bus. But I think that it's a really interesting topic to talk about how this the mental health of a player is going to impact so much. Mm-hmm. And with the fact that everyone is so young as well, like, you come from sitting in a PC bung grinding and training with no eyes on you to, like, especially here in Korea, because we have, it's like almost an ageist idea about how to qualify into the LCK, which is you need to be a rookie who's extremely young. And we've seen that a lot of these players are stepping up to the plate. Pjosik and Carrier proving that time and time again here in the LCK, being extraordinarily young, extraordinarily talented. But they got thrust from zero eyes to all of them in like an instant.
Yeah.
And that, like, you have a bad game after that and things must be just devastating because you have no, like, there's nothing built there. You don't have, like, a strategy in mind to deal with, like, the social pressure.
The other thing, not even about, like, Kyria and Pjosik and dealing with the social pressure, is the social pressure that comes when you're on losing streaks and no one can diagnose sort of what is wrong within the teams. That can lead to... I don't even know what it could lead to. Obviously, it's going to be different.
I think misdiagnosis is the biggest
issue. Misdiagnosis is more problematic, and I think that it generates a lot of animosity inside of teams internally when no one seems to know what is going wrong. And Korea is... They're very resistant to change in general, and so... They can also misdiagnose a lot in terms of what is actually causing us to lose and stuff like that. So it can lead to this very negative, and obviously I'm not talking about medical stuff. I'm talking about problems within the game. So it's really scary. You have to wonder how the bottom standing teams are doing as we're moving, you know, into round two of Spring Split. And even across the world, when you see this happen in EU and NA, stuff tends to go on fire internally, and we never really get to hear about it. And a lot of people in the public, they bring out their pitchforks. And
I want to actually sort of latch onto that a little bit, because I think that the public is the most difficult part when there's these internal issues happening, because everyone's got an opinion, right? But no one actually knows what it's like to live in that team house or be part of that management or understand that coach's particular style or, you know, what the analysts are saying, all this sort of stuff. And everyone's like making these outrageous claims like, oh, it's this player that's doing this because he said this on his stream that one time that's not connected to this at all. Like, it's people making judgments on team's performance. And the problem with that is that our players interact with their fans, right? Our players, like, read their Twitter comments. Like, they read Reddit.
And even if they say they don't, they do.
Yeah, exactly. But even if they go in with a mindset of, I'm not going to listen to this, you best believe that information's getting through and affecting them in some way.
And the other...
It's so negative.
Scary thing as well, as a player, is a lot of staffs are not equipped to discern differences between mistakes or good play or anything, regardless of what they'll say. And it gets very worrisome. I know that some pro players, especially during the offseason, were very vocal about this, that public perception on Twitter and Reddit does drive narratives that then influences internal staff meetings.
Yeah.
Which is kind of nuts when you think about it, because you can have Larry Shortbags or something deciding that they
I
saw
love
a couple
Larry Shortbags. Yeah, this is my favorite.
That you have a couple of hate Reddit threads or Twitter things, and they start asking questions that they can't discern who's right or wrong. They could have two people sit down. You could have one expert and one random clueless person. That the expert says something in a non-confident way.
Yeah, exactly.
And the other person is very vocal, very strong, and manages to convince the person. Yeah, they're the one that's right.
Being good at arguing doesn't make you right. It just makes you good at arguing. Yes. That's why debate is a competition and not like the person who's right wins.
It's very scary to know that that's a thing that can also subconsciously affect players. And I think that it actually drives some players into playing overly safe or cautious or reserved. I mean, I'm just going for synonyms at this point, but little synonym. And that can affect the play. overall. And this isn't just an LCK thing. This is a global phenomenon that can end up happening.
I think the reason why the LCK has been so slow is that there are a lot of teams that are afraid to take risks. I want to sort of like, this is going back a really long way, but one of my favorite teams of all time was Moscow 5 back in season 2, when they were this team that came onto the scene and did everything by what the analysts were telling us, right? They did everything wrong and just beat everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they had their top laner at the enemy blue buff, stealing it before the game even started, losing an entire wave of minions to walk into laner's gangplank with a blue buff.
Yeah.
Things like that. They were playing champions that were completely out of meta and bringing them into meta. Shyvana being a perfect example. This was, you know, right around the time she was released, but none of the pros had even thought that she'd be a viable option because farming junglers weren't a thing at that stage. You know, to be a jungler, you needed to protect your lanes and all this sort of stuff, and there was an expectation and a stigma there. But no, they said, I'm just going to be really, really strong. And I think that they actually influenced a lot of patches that happened during that particular time of League of Legends as well. But it's innovation as well as like the see hero, kill hero mentality, which was Moscow 5's saying, you know, the famous interview with Alex Itch when he's talking about sort of their mindset and like what makes Moscow 5 so good. And he's like, well, we see a guy and we go over and we press our buttons on him and he dies. And then we take something else from the map. You know, like I think that a lot of teams these days, especially in the LCK, too scared to take that first step. Like playing with initiative and on the front foot is so much harder than answering something, because if you know you see a team pushing your top out of turret, you know, you're then provided with all of these potential answers, whereas if you have every option on the table, it's pretty hard to say, oh, we're going to go and do this particular thing because it's going to be better, even if we don't have full information.
And the funniest thing about that in general, right, is when you talk about on the cast about defensive play or freezing and all this other stuff, it actually has less requirements that need to be met from a skill perspective, right, than the proactively pushing waves, lining up minion waves, you know, coordinating everything and then managing to make an aggressive play. So the irony is when people will accuse like me personally of these players aren't robots, they're humans, and it's like, yeah, you an idiot, you're absolutely right. So
that's actually the point.
Like, you know, your comment is a parody in itself, and it's ironic because you don't even realize how stupid you are for strengthening my argument by saying what you are. And so what's that saying though is
that they don't understand actually what you're telling the players to do in that instance.
They don't understand,
like, because you're right, like that what freezing is actually is limiting the amount of options that your opponent has. And actually in the LCK, where everyone's like so scared of being proactive, it's almost the perfect thing to do, because then they have to make a choice that, and you know more of the options that they have that are going to be better. Yes. So,
and the other argument about like, well, the freezing's so good, why don't teams do it? Well, when anything first comes, why didn't anyone do it before?
Yeah,
that's not an argument in itself. Why did it take a year and a half of Leandre's campaigning? Now the funniest thing here is I talked about this on stream with a couple of pro players. Leandre's or Morello has basically died in LCS and LEC.
Yeah, LCK are, still we still love
LCK.
I took a few photos. There's still a couple Instagram of sinners.
Yeah, I need to make that Instagram account someday. Mm. But LEC and LCS, I mean, you have pro players that tweet about it now jokingly. Like they'll be like, why did so and so build Morello's? Or Leandre's was the better item here. So like, that feels really nice to see this progression, and yet I don't think it's a coincidence that LCK, the league without really any interaction with the West, other than the global broadcast, but we don't talk to the players or interact with InVen and stuff like that.
The thing that's actually cool about this split, especially, is that a lot of teams have been looking outside of Korea for analysts and things like that.
Yeah, and
of course, ideas as well. I think after 2018, it was a big blow to Korea, and that was the year where we're like, well, now we'll try again. And then after losing in 2019 as well, that's when it's like, well, hang on, like, crap, our boat's sinking. let's try and figure out a way to actually sort it out. And looking at the teams that were consistently beating Korea throughout the last 2 years has been like something new that teams have been looking at. I know there are analysts from Europe working for T1 at the moment. They have a lot of different voices over there. Of course, Coach Kim coming on in, and SKT look like they're improving week after week. Like, they dropped that one series to Hanwha and we were worried, and we haven't needed to be worried since then because they've been you know, dominating their opponents left and right. So I think it's really cool that there is at least understanding of what's happening elsewhere. When we're going to see it actually implemented is going to be the really hard thing. And the reason why Korea was so good at the very beginning was that they understood the game better than other regions.
Well, they were also so focused on the minutiae of what makes a good or a player good, like the fundamentals, right? Mechanics.
But even like macro was a thing that was invented by, you know, South Korean teams. Like,
yeah, for
well
the most part.
The
yeah.
Day.
Yeah. Lane swaps and stuff and stuff like that. So, now it just feels like they're stuck in their current phase, and they've been stuck for a long time. And the other thing that is worrisome is the best teams are often winning because they have the best fundamentals.
Yeah.
And even teams that might draft better or actually have better strategy don't win. And this can lead the best teams to misdiagnosing what could be better.
Yeah.
And so throughout the split, they might end up coasting and winning. In summer, they'll coast and win, etc. In international competition, when things get harder, when things are more limited, when things are being assessed more, it gets a lot more difficult to conduct yourself in that manner.
And when, like, that's talking, you know, looping back around again to the psychological aspect of League of Legends, which is as pressure mounts, it gets more and more difficult to take risks, to do something outside of the box. Because as soon as you do something different, you're painting a target on your back for criticism. As like, if you're a coach and you do something weird and strange instead of just a standard way of winning the game, you're opening yourself up to so many more criticisms. Because people say like, well, why was Faker playing Zillion in this game? We haven't seen him play it all year. And then you are forced to defend that decision instead of, you know, say, for example, Faker playing Azir or LeBlanc, you know, champions that everyone's playing that he's extraordinarily good at, and then they're not able to get over the line because they have just a super standard, straight up the line composition that's not necessarily designed to take down a specific composition or specific team or anything like that, you know?
Yes.
Like, I think that we need to have our, what are those, like Coach Carter? You know, did you see that movie, Samuel L. Jackson?
Oh, I thought you were talking about Carter with two C's, the LOL coach.
No. Coach Carter, like, it's a basketball movie. And it's basically just, it's about this coach believing in his players individually and making sure that, you know, they're in the right mental state in order to play effectively. It's actually a beautiful movie. Mm-hmm. That synopsis was not great, but I absolutely loved it. And what that movie did for me was sort of show the power of having a good mentor and the job of a coach to provide players with the confidence to play outside of what is the expectation, right?
Yes.
And that's what creates underdogs that can, you know, achieve more than they should be able to, because they're not listening to the idiots on Reddit. They're understanding that their coach and their team believe in them, and then they're like insular. The power level's insular. And then what happens is it sort of like circulates inside this little thing, and it's like it all just gets faster and faster. And if you're all pushing each other, you know, theoretically the acceleration situation, something to do with protons and that big circle in Europe. Never mind. Is it in Europe? I think it is.
The
particle accelerator?
Yeah.
That's what I was trying to get to.
Yeah. I know where you're going.
Yeah. Didn't quite work. But,
all right.
You know,
that's fine.
Some of my metaphors are okay.
Yeah.
Other ones not great.
It's
but
fine.
The Coach Carter one, that certainly works, because I think that when you can start holding each other up, that's when things get really good. And I think it's even more important in esports when the outside vitriol is just so toxic.
Yes.
Because like you need some sort of barrier, you know, like
right.
put cling wrap on it. Like, it's, you need to stop that crap from getting in. I need to put my mask on just to avoid the Reddit drama. Is that why this is
here? To avoid the Morellos.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, yeah, you've been infected. Yeah, it's a big problem. So, yeah, I'm really hoping that we get to see more of the Noggery style play rather than what we saw out of, you know, Summit flashing into four people, like, desperately trying to get, you know, some sort of kill, which obviously showed that there were issues within Sandbox that went beyond, like, Summit having a bad day.
Yes.
Because, like, that level of desperation doesn't happen in a happy team. And it doesn't happen if you're, like, you're feeling in a good moment. And losing is, like, this is not saying that the coaching staff or anything on Sandbox are not working out, because that's not how that works, and everyone has a bad game. But you see that sort of play and you start wondering, like, oh, like, how are they going to navigate that? And actually, Sandbox played, you know, better afterwards.
Yeah.
But they're still falling down and down. And I think that was sort of like the moment where things really snapped.
Mm-hmm.
And when they manage to pull themselves back around, then it'll be a great redemption arc that we can possibly revisit here in the Pog State to talk about it. But DragonX were another example of a team that looked like they tilted off the planet, and then in their next series, immediately afterwards, played like DragonX, the Harlem Globetrotters.
Even in their series, though, against Gen G, I mean, they still made it look a lot closer than I think it should have been, despite how much of a blowout it was on paper.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was really a blowout surprising. Because of, like, being able to see the key moment where things fell apart, and then the next game was a stomp, you know? Like, it, you do see, like, the DragonX wins game one, and then they're doing well in the early game, and then...
Yeah.
And so that's what I mean by blowout, is in, like, they actually, like, got a flat tie halfway through the series.
Yep.
Which is something that happens with young players. Like, I actually don't think this is an awful thing for DragonX at all, but it is an example of, like, what losing in a pivotal moment can do, because that was a game three that that fell down immediately afterwards.
Yep.
So really hoping that the LCK can get themselves sorted out. Okay, so we've been talking about the challenges of being a pro player, the extra pressures that are added by, you know, this overly harsh sort of Reddit environment, a sort of much closer fandom, I guess, is the feeling here in esports, because, you know, you're playing your job, theoretically, right? You're playing your sport on the computer, and then it's not like you're on a football field and you have to walk off the football field in order to, like, meet the fans or anything like that. Yeah. You know, get in your car and drive home and then you're on the computer. This is like you alt tab from the game and you could be right into Reddit, like, immediately. So, like, the feedback loop is, like, so incredibly short that you don't have that sort of moment to sort of catch up and relax, I guess. There's no cooldown period. But what I want to talk about are some of the players that have overcome this and still risen to greatness. I think within League of Legends, we have lots of options as far as those sort of players. Like, I think Score is a great example of someone that had a very long career, struggled to actually find a championship until, you know, his second last year ever playing the game.
Yeah.
And was still considered one of the greatest junglers to ever play League of Legends over such a long storied career without actually having the accolades, which I think is a real showing of mental fortitude and being able to keep on top of what could be negativity towards him. You know, he lost a Baron to a Gangplank ultimate when the Baron was at 2 HP and then went on to even be a better jungler years afterwards. So it's those sort of players that I think really define what a great is. And I think there are others from other esports as well. One of your favorite esports is StarCraft. And I think Flash is probably the winningest player of all time in any esport ever.
I think Flash is probably considered, in his game, StarCraft 1.
Yeah.
I mean, he's nicknamed God in Korean esports. That's actually just his name. I think that LoL players, they look at Faker as basically...
Yeah, absolutely.
They think that
we were getting to Faker.
Yeah, we were getting to Faker. Now, he's akin to Flash, but Flash's level of dominance is it's just not comparable.
It's unparalleled.
It is actually unparalleled. Yeah. So a super faker, it's really not comparable. And obviously I love League a lot. I even actually enjoy it a lot more now than like StarCraft 2 and other stuff of that nature. But Flash, I'm pretty sure is just the undisputed best esports player.
Yeah.
I don't think it's really close.
Give me one second here. Let me just bring up Flash's record. Okay, so I can go through and I'll just count the firsts. You know, there are a lot of seconds, but we don't accept seconds. So the most recent tournament that he played in, he won a Freak of Star League Season 8, 4-0 in the best of 7. He won 25K, and this was in 2019, right? We go down to the very bottom. I'll skip through like a bunch of these. Like there's GOM TV, like literally 10 years before that last victory, yeah. he was beginning to win, right? Like this is a career that is just unprecedented. Like
and the other thing
he won everything
about this is that StarCraft 1, foreigners do not get to play this game with Koreans. The discrepancy between the Koreans and everyone else in the world in StarCraft, no matter how hard other regions tried, China, Europe, NA, even players that tried to move to Korea to become professionals,
yeah,
you couldn't. The absolute best foreigners would go 20% win rate against the B and C teamers in Korea.
Yeah.
So we look at League of Legends and we see teams like G2 and Fnatic, and you see Western players get Challenger on Korean server, etc. That didn't exist. It doesn't exist in StarCraft.
Yeah, no. Back in StarCraft, and like
so,
what the way we have to sort of relate this back to the LCK and League of Legends is that like that's what used to be the same stigma. That was what Koreans would take with them to international tournaments, was a 100% expectation to win.
To win, yeah.
And look, they did a lot of the time. I mean, Season 2 was a huge upset. That was when, you know, Azubu Frost was supposed to win. They got kicked out. TPA were able to take that title. But it was still a dominant showing. And then 2013 onwards, you guys probably know that there was this team called SKT that did pretty well and just dominated everyone. And then Samsung rose up through the ranks. I mean, we had Samsung White as well first, and then Samsung Galaxy afterwards. Very different teams, but of course still Korean, and the Korean dominance continued all the way up until 2018.
Yes,
where you know, we started to struggle and not actually find all of these victories that were struggling terribly hard to claw back again. And you know, like there were times where it was even difficult to find victories in like Asia games, which is that was going to be a huge tournament because it was going to enable our players to skip out on military service.
Yes.
And that would have been huge, but we weren't able to beat China even there. So it went from like utter dominance from 2013 through till 2017, and then it was failure from that point. And now I want to talk about one of my personal favorite esports players of all time, and that's from the fighting game genre, the FGC. Daigo Umehara is probably one of the most impressive losers. No, and he's not a loser in himself, but he, even when he loses, it looks like he just gets stronger and comes back. And this guy is like knocking on 40 right now and is still able.
Is he that old?
Yeah. He was born in 1981.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. All right. And so 1998 is when he started playing back in the Street Fighter 2 era. He played a whole lot of other 2D fighting games, but you know, always loved Street Fighter, was known for his Ryu play, and especially known for taking down Justin Wong, I think, in the 2004 EVO Championship with his, like, insane 16 parries in a row to, like, neutral jump parry super combo, which he did in like a clutch game three that would have got him eliminated from a final at Evo, and he was still able to like keep himself together to the point where like he was able to actually perform an extraordinary mechanical feat. Like,
and I believe that
probably
that,
one of the best moments in esports.
Yeah, I think that is one of the best ever in esports. I think it's even more iconic than the Faker Zed play, which is obviously iconic to League of Legends players. And the other thing about that clip, I think that Daigo has talked about it in recent times, where that is the parries and what he did is supposed to have audio cues. But because of the tournament that he was in,
yeah, I mean, he was in this like tiny room, like it was full of people losing their minds.
And I believe he just did it all off muscle memory. And so that's insane what he did, because you should.
And actually that goes perfectly into trying to explain what I meant when I was talking about being good at losing. And
yes,
it's because Daigo Uemahara is like outspoken in saying that he is not a naturally talented fighting game player. That's not him. He was just an extremely passionate fighting game player that used that passion to be able to practice more, better. And then get himself to a point where he was chasing after not winning. He didn't want to chase after winning. He was chasing after challenge.
Yeah.
That's what he wanted to get to. Like his next opponent, the more and more difficult they were going to be. And like he in a few of the documentaries that I've watched of Uemahara over the years, like talking about when Tokido was rising to his crazy level of form, you know, I think a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
He was one of the players that, you know, Daigo started to, you know, respect and look up to. And one of the reasons why he stopped playing Street Fighter and started, I think he was playing Mahjong, and then he found a job in aged care afterwards, got a qualification there because he was looking for meaning in his life, right? And when he got to the top of Street Fighter, he was like, well, I mean, I've done it now. Like, what he wanted was more and more challenge, not more and more winning, right, which was what stopped him from being able to compete as much. And then he realized that, you know, that wasn't the thing, and he came back and he was playing Street Fighter V, had to switch characters, which wasn't so great. His Ryu was always, you know, the thing that everyone was looking out for. Street Fighter IV was good because at least he could play Evil Ryu and it was a little bit better, but in Street Fighter V, the Guile switch hasn't necessarily worked at the moment, but he's still playing and still grinding. And he's released his book, The Will to Keep Winning, which is his take on finding success, not necessarily just in esports, but he's just talking about what it is to be a champion at your given game.
Yes.
And there are so many just great quotes about not necessarily like being better than your opponents and things like that. It's more about like how you deal with failure and how you deal with losing, which is what allows you to win more.
Yeah.
Like Daigo is outspoken in saying that like his life is all about failure, but that's only made him better and more hungry as his life goes on. And I think that's what makes him so good at being sort of that role model for so many players, especially in the FGC. Like I think it was this immediately after that Justin Wong moment that like he was everyone's favorite player. Like Street Fighter just exploded at that particular point, and everyone remembers, and everyone's like inspired by that particular moment. I just think that like we're missing a lot of that sort of attitude because of the age of a lot of the players. I think that there is value to having older players within the League of Legends ecosystem.
Yeah, the whole age stigma is one of the weirdest things in the world. I think that age has to be assessed via passion, not via stage. I know that I've tweeted very angrily about some stuff that I've witnessed during the off season. For instance, challenger players on Korea getting friend added by coaches of certain teams and then saying that they're 20 and 21 and then the coach is saying that they're too old, and it's like, your joke.
it's ridiculous.
You're actually a person in a titled position with zero qualifications other than being bestowed such position.
Yeah.
With no knowledge of what you're talking about. And you're a glorified manager. And here you are telling someone that they're too old due to an arbitrary birth date.
And also, like, a lot of it has to do with, like, they look at when Faker started playing and when was Faker found. It's about these, like, historical things that have been a flow-on effect of, like, certain specific special moments of stars aligning. Yeah. And that's where it sort of comes from. And I think one of the reasons why players get to a certain age and then retire, which is something that's been happening, right? Like, you've got players retiring before they're even halfway to 30, which is crazy to think about.
Yes.
But I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that there is such a high pressure environment whenever you're in one of these team houses, whenever you're playing in League of Legends esports, to do with, you know, the amount of instant feedback and blah blah blah, but also like the fact that it is sort of so intense from the word go, and that means that burnout happens
really fast because of how intense esports is. And then also, I think that burnout maybe even happens faster in Korea because of military and social pressure.
Yeah.
And
the military pressure that he's referring to, by the way, is
mandatory military service.
That's not like the military's coming to your house to put pressure on you. Yeah. That's not that kind of military pressure, guys.
So that's another thing that adds pressure here. Just the whole age stigma is so weird. There's so many Western players that end up hitting their peaks, or they end up actually debuting even at later ages than what are commonly sought out here.
But like, I want to go, we've been talking a lot about like different esports and things like that. And I do want to talk a little bit about StarCraft again, because I think I look at StarCraft as being one of the most like micro intensive games of all time, right? Like when it comes to like needing to be able to react really fast, needing to be able to control everything extraordinarily fast with very fast, like having all of the muscle memory there, yes, but also being able to like cope with different things on the fly. Like StarCraft players aren't that young. Yes, there's like, you know,
Flash
there are
29?
Really
29?
I think Flash might be even older than that.
I think he's 29. I believe Flash is 29. I know there's a lot of other. Now, there's also some newer StarCraft 1 players that started
he's 27.
Okay, he's 27. Is he 28 in July, right? July 14th?
He is. July 5th.
Okay.
You're very close.
All right, whatever. Mm-hmm. So Flash is on the older end, but there's some newer StarCraft 1 players that started in the 2010 to 2020, like that decade.
Yeah.
And they're getting good now, and they're in their mid-20s. But now StarCraft 1's skill level is higher than it was at the end of StarCraft 1's era. So it's preposterous to say that players can't eventually get to the skill level, or that you had to be young to do it, amongst all these other things. It's just so perplexing, especially when you look at a lot of other esports that have older ages inside of it.
Yeah.
It's just very, very bizarre.
Well, I mean, like, if you think about, like, the arguably best StarCraft player of the West at the moment, Serral, who's I witnessed winning last night against TY and progressing in the ESL, the Katowice tournament. Mm-hmm. He is 21 years old, right?
Yeah.
And yes, he's been good for the last couple of years, but it seems to me like Serral's only now sort of finding his stride and finding himself when he's up against all of these players like Dark, who's been playing for years, Stats, been playing for years, Sue, been playing for years. All of these are his Korean opposition, I guess, is what you could say when you're talking about like the best players in the world. And like, he's 21.
A lot of,
you know, like,
lot
this is one of the guys that coach would have spoken to and said,
you're too old.
You oldie.
Yeah, you boomer.
Go buy a coffee.
But so it's so bizarre. It's so strange. And again, measuring it by passion, I think, is infinitely more important. Like, really assessing.
I mean, like, that's what's going to be rewarding, but it's also what's really hard to gauge at the beginning. It's very easy to read someone's birthday.
Yes.
It's very difficult to interview someone and be like, oh, yes, well, their mental aptitude and motivation is definitely there after this 10-minute conversation I had through the League of Legends client.
There's the psychological aspect of it that I know that when I tweeted about this, some people had chimed in as an aspect of it, that obviously it is more difficult to mentally control people in their 20s. They're obviously much more aware of stuff that's going on. They're
I guess so, but I mean, teenagers are known for just wanting to rebel against everything, so...
Well, yeah, but 18, 19-year-olds that are just... Or 17, 18, 19-year-olds that are just getting into the scene and stuff, they're ignorant of a lot of things. We've seen that during this past offseason with contract issues.
Yeah, that's true.
They're very ignorant. They don't know a lot. They're very clueless. They're usually... I mean, not all the time, but I think in a lot of cases that we've seen, and also subjective experience, they're emotionally stunted in some ways. And so it's a lot easier to control them in a way, and I know that sounds
manipulable.
But
when you have less life experience, it's easier to be manipulated.
Yes,
because you, like, life experience is, you know, making mistakes, getting things wrong years.
I have a lot of
they don't have as many years
opinions on this topic that I've been very, very vocal about on Twitter and on my stream. That a lot of people that end up in titled positions, you look at how they ended up there and their history, and it doesn't make any fucking sense. Mm. And now suddenly they have authority over people that I don't know. It always leaves me thinking, like, what is going on here? Where's the expertise? Where's the... So
I think as this industry leaves its infancy, that's going to...
Yes.
That's going to get better and better. But
it's
something that at the very beginning of esports was certainly very pronounced.
Yes.
Because it's the Wild West, man. Like, no one necessarily knows what it is. Like, and there's no unions and blah, blah, blah. Try and keep track of all
this stuff.
There's
a very big difference between people that have degrees and have experience shadowing or doing things in certain fields, and people that have been immersed in the field for years upon years upon years, getting firsthand experience. There's something really scary when people who have neither of those two things end up in titled positions.
Yeah.
That's really scary. And so when a lot of people ask me now if they're not very good at League of Legends from a strategical perspective, how to get into esports or how to get into coaching esports and stuff, my initial knee-jerk reaction is there's going to be a need for mental health care within these teams in coming years. In fact, I don't know how many teams might or might not have therapists or psychologists on site
in Western culture there are, like, I mean, sorry, in Western esports there's far more. It's almost every team these days. Like,
well, they're either looking for it, they have sports psychologists, but I'm talking about is an actual,
like, on-site psychologist
or someone that's just on call.
Right.
Like, maybe that works out of their home and that they can just be brought in whatever. And obviously you're footing a very large bill to have them just be on call. But when we're looking at the amount of money that is invested into these teams, we're talking millions.
Yeah.
It's not ludicrous to invest into a psychologist or a therapist.
And you're talking millions. Have you seen the TV series Billions, where... It's about, you know, investment bankers and all this sort of stuff, which is considered a high stress job because it's all about, like, dealing with large sums of money. You can potentially lose extraordinarily large sums of money in a very short amount of time. And that can be stressful, I imagine. I don't, you know, haven't invested that much money in high risk stock or anything like that in my time. It's been a while since I watched the show. This is a metaphor that came to my mind very, very quickly. But they have, like, an on-site psychologist, and it's based on the fact that it is such high stress, you know?
Yeah.
This job requires help psychologically in order to stay in the right mind, in order to make the company more money, because you're able to make intelligent choices even in these high stress environments. Esports is, like, a very similar thing. Like esports is massively high pressure. It is very fast moving, and you're not given very much downtime, and you need diffusal options. I think, like, a psychologist on call is almost mandatory.
I think that it should be mandatory for, well, not mandatory, because it's hard, like, where can Riot really draw the line with enforcing things? But I think in coming years,
oh, right. I don't think it's ever something that should be policed by Riot or anything like that. But I think that this is something that teams certainly should be thinking about in order to
the other thing
keep
is
their players healthy.
Getting it's a little bit difficult too, because everyone has unique personalities and everyone is going to respond to therapy or psychotherapy differently.
Oh, absolutely.
And
so
that is going to be really hard as well, as well as getting a clinician who understands esports and social media. And as someone that went through, you know, 2,000 to 3,000 hours of therapy or something from age 9 to 18.
I went through 5 therapists, I think, until I had one that actually did anything.
Yeah, so I had about I had 3 different hospitalizations in America. I had about a dozen plus psychiatrists, psychologists growing up, and I had so many different behavioral therapists just because of depression, anxiety, and other stuff that ended up happening growing up and through my adolescence. And so there, out of everything, there was less than about 3 that I ever felt like, okay, this person not only gets it, but doesn't just view me as a paycheck as well.
Yeah.
And now there's one psychiatrist that he's not doing therapy sessions, but he's on Twitch.
Yep.
Dr. Kanogia, I hope that I'm saying that right. Healthy Gamer GG, he streams.
Mm-hmm.
He does a lot of mindfulness and like meditation type things. He's had a lot of esports personalities on his stream to like talk to him about mental health and other stuff. I personally went on.
Yeah, I remember.
The guy is fantastic. There must be more people like him that exist, but they're just not in the mainstream eye. People like that would be fantastic for esports orgs.
I mean, my shout out to Sarah, my last therapist that I had before I really, you know, got myself back on track. Like, her words have stuck with me since 2013, which is like when I last saw her, right? Like, if you find the right psychologist that understands you to the point where they know what it is you need to understand in order to get through your issues, like, it's mind-blowingly important. Like, it's so, like, the value of that session, like, made up for all of the years of garbage that I put up with, with people that didn't even understand what I was talking about. And, like, she, like, I don't know, she did something where she, like, read my mind or something like that and told me precisely like what I was afraid of, what I needed to get past, what was going to provide me with the motivation I needed to get on with my life. And holy shit, man. Yeah. Now here I am with you in the Pog state. I would have never even known what the Pog state was if it wasn't for that. So like those sort of moments and like gentlemen, like the guy you were talking about, like are just so necessary.
Yeah.
So maybe I'll book in a session just to say hi, because I didn't actually, I haven't actually seen his stream yet.
He's
keen.
He's really good. He's all right. Very, very good.
So we've had our hard hitting portion of the show,
mm-hmm.
Which is of course all about, you know, psychology and trying to overcome hardships within esports, the battles that a lot of these players have to go through, our personal battles, all those sorts of things. What I want to talk about now are sort of the top 5 players in the LCK right now.
Yes.
When it comes to consistent performance.
Yeah.
And I want to see whether we can come to an agreement as to who they are in some form of order. Yeah, let's try and do it in order. Let's try and like, we'll spitball some players first, and then we'll see whether we can actually stack rank them. I don't know whether we're going to be capable of this, by the way. This is just something that we've decided to do right now. So I've got a few floating around in my mind. Who's standing out to you as the sort of most consistent, unflappable player?
Chovy? Yeah.
Wow. So
even
you're
in the games that
you're naming the
fire.
Guy that was known for choking.
No, that's Chokey.
Different player.
Yeah.
Got
Dr. Jekyll,
it.
Mr. Hyde sort of a thing.
Wow.
Chokey hasn't been seen around Law Park these days. I don't
he
think
hasn't.
They're letting him in.
He doesn't live here anymore.
Yeah, he doesn't.
And look, I think that we're going to be naming a lot of solo laners here. Because like in my mind, like
Chovy, Faker.
Keen comes to mind. Faker comes to mind.
No, Keen's been
Keane's been tilting, but also been hard carrying after.
Yeah,
tilting.
So you want consistency.
Oh, I guess maybe I'm rating him based on his ability to bounce back after.
Because then Summit
times.
Would be in there too.
Oh God, not no. Okay, so okay, scratch Keane. What about Nogri? Because think about it, this guy got hard camped and obliterated. I think
Nogri is doing really good. I think Nogri is doing really good. I think my list, not in order, because I think that's where it gets really hard and
yeah,
it just causes discourse amongst people.
All right, maybe we won't do it in order. Yeah, we'll say them in a certain order, yeah. But that's not in order, okay?
Chovy?
Yep. I think
Chovy
Teddy has to be there.
Yeah, Chovy.
The guy's a machine.
Cuz, Teddy, Faker...
BDD.
Yeah, actually, I think BDD, yeah.
Especially this year. I think BDD wouldn't have been part of that conversation last year when he was struggling on KT. But this year, oh my God, some of the stuff that's come out of that guy has just been outstanding. And I don't know how much of that comes down to coaching staff and changing team environments and things like that. But whether or not it's... Genji being better or worse than KT, I think change is really important for resetting your mentality.
Yes.
And I think we all knew, like everyone knew that BDD was a mechanical prodigy. This guy was like scouted on Longju like ages ago. You know, he didn't even debut on that team. Who did he debut for? It was CJ? Well back in the day?
Yeah, CJ, right?
Yeah. But then, you know, he was a Zed god in solo queue and started playing on Longju as this like really young player with like all of this talent and was able to go all the way through to LCK champions and then sort of had some slower years. But this year he's just been so consistent. And Faker, like I feel like we skip over talking about Faker because it's so obvious how incredibly good he is. But watching him play... His last four games that we have on record here at the time of recording are two almost perfect performances on LeBlanc in a series.
Yep.
And then an actual perfect game playing LeBlanc. And then his Azir game afterwards.
Yep.
Like, it's just been an absolute treat to see that the Demon King is still this good 6 years on after... You know, he came out and was just this kid that no one understood, like, how he did all of the things that he did back in 2013. Like, wait, 7 years.
I saw him miss the LeBlanc chain on yesterday's cast, so not impressed.
You know? he might have missed one or two, but my God, man.
I also saw him miss a CS.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I mean.
Oh, no. Well, like, yeah, I think you bring up Cuz is a really cool one, because Cuz was... actually one of our players that was the most emotionally driven to do silly things in previous performances. He had to be benched for Peanut moving into 2018. Cuz sort of like, I don't know, I think maybe something got to him. The pressure of performing on a team that had so many expectations was so hard for him. But you're absolutely right. Even on Kingzone last year, he was just a joy to watch. His Gragas is always just incredible. He got a player of the game for it in the last match that we have since yesterday, which for this recording, it's not the yesterday that you guys have, but the last one. He was just superb once again. And we've been really high on seeing whether Cuz can... live up to the expectations of his Kingzone performance that didn't have as much pressure around it than it is experiencing life on T1. And it's amazing that there's three T1 players on our list of consistency when the pressure for being a T1 player is the highest of any player in the world.
Yes.
I think you can pretty comfortably say that.
Yeah.
It's very impressive. I like the list. I think Chovy's a big surprise. But a really happy
Chovy
surprise.
Chovy has been very stable, even when the Dragon X games have been on fire.
Yeah.
Especially on his Ziggs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he hadn't even really crossed my mind.
Yeah.
And yeah. That's really cool. Yeah. So we've got Chovy, Teddy, Faker, Cuz, BDD.
Yeah.
As our consistent ones. So watch out. Maybe, you know, if they have had some rougher games after this recording, let us know in the comments what you think your top five would be going into week 5 of the LCK. I'd be really interested to hear what your thoughts are going to be as well. But guys, speaking of your thoughts, we have a giveaway. Announcement. Damn it. Ian could have done echo on it.
Yeah, he could have done
and
it.
And now he can't do echo on it because I've echoed and you can't echo the echo.
That's fine.
Maybe Ian could double echo. Whoa. Maybe. No, I don't think so. All right. This is the moment that you've all been waiting for. We have this. You saw him in the last episode. There will be glamour shots, Ian. I'm looking at you. Glamour shots. Glamour Teemo shots. You know that there's a Teemo inside this box. I'm not going to get it out for you right now, but you know that it's there. And one of you has written us a marketing spiel that is good enough to warrant you this particular rapper Teemo. And a calendar as well, which I don't actually have in front of me, but it's the True Damage calendar from Riot, and it is super cool. I've been using it, as I mentioned, in the last episode. So, drumroll please. Release. Can't actually say that word. Drumroll please. Our first calendar goes to Toxicity is but a symptom.
Nice.
Yeah, nailed that. Toxicity is but a symptom. The Pog State, where an Australian caveman and a blind American try to make sense of the world around them. This was, I think, one of my personal favorites. But, of course, this is a democracy. And we have, you know, 5 of us in this room that have to come out with a winner. But Toxicity is but a symptom. Congratulations. You have yourself a calendar.
Yeah.
All right. Do you want to do the next one? We have 5 calendars to give away, and one of them comes with this beautiful
Which one
teamer.
Am I doing next?
You're doing this one here.
Jonghyun Ji?
Yeah, Jonghyun Ji. You have just won the second calendar. Bit of a spoiler alert there, but what they said was...
The Pog State, the podcast where you finally get to see that the LCK casters have legs. No, we don't.
The best part is that in this particular shot...
We don't.
You can't see my legs.
You can't see, yeah.
I ain't wearing pants. Yeah. All right, I'll do the next one. The next calendar goes to Derpfish Says No. And what they said was, welcome to the Pog State, where the memes are fresh and our potential gets higher, but the LCK's drafts are still a dumpster fire. Which does have a pretty good rhyme to it.
It does.
I feel like if you had have written like one more line, that could have been a winner.
That could have been a winner.
Or maybe if you had have written like 7 verses and then given
True.
It to us in video format.
True.
With really sick editing that... Ian could have then augmented afterwards. That would have been even better.
True.
So Dirtfish Says No, if you're watching this episode as well, then please make that happen. That would be super good. All right, and you get to read out our last pure calendar entry, which is, yeah, you're good, mate, Hobo Tim.
Hobo Tim. Sweet dollar tea from McDonald's, they drink that. Super hot fire, they spit that. The Pog State with Atlas and LS, you should watch that. I don't know, but I don't think Hobo Tim's a rapper.
Yeah, I don't think so either. Nor does... I don't really know what dollar T is, so maybe he should have been rated higher, but I'm an Australian who doesn't drink dollar T, nor do
That's
I
fine.
Understand what that is.
It's okay.
And so what that brings us to is our first place winner, who will be taking home rapper Teemo. And this person's name is The Bear. And what they said was the Pog State, where two casters talk more about League of Legends than when casting the LCK. Which I think is brilliant because it's just...
He's talking shit. Yeah, really I love is. It.
And the picture is of a little bear. And it's like such a cute bear that's like giving someone a high five. And he's like spitting massive shade.
Came out of hibernation.
Oh, just comment. For that. Yeah. Yeah. Oh.
That is, I think of Twitch chat when I read his message. Yeah. I see his photo. Yeah.
Super good. Anyway, congratulations, The Bear. You're going to be taking home this glorious Rapitimo and one of the True Damage calendars there as well. And that is going to bring us to the end of this episode. Episode 3 now in the books. I can't believe that we've already done 3. Make sure, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts, yeah, that you go give us a review and give us 5 stars and do all of that cool stuff, because we want to get to the new and trendy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Not really entirely sure what that is, but we really want to get up there. Mm-hmm. We're also on YouTube if you've just been listening, so you can come and watch the video version. And if you are on YouTube, there might be some more goodies for you to experience,
yeah,
if you just if you go ahead and go to the listenable option as well. It's all available on Twitter as far as everywhere you can get it from. Of course, the podcast will be up also on Spotify as far as the popular outlets,
yep,
are concerned. The Twitter is at Pogstate. That can be where you contact Ian as well to give him all of his glowing feedback. And you could also say nice stuff about James, our director. He's pretty good at stuff too, but he doesn't get to show off as much as Ian does. So, you know, sometimes it comes, yeah, with the territory, doesn't, yeah, it? Yeah, it's just a little bit of a shame. He has some cool ideas, but they just seem like our ideas.
Mm-hmm.
So we're just basically stealing his thunder, yeah, the entire time. Sorry, James. Never mind, though. You can follow me at Atlas TV, at Atlas TV. It's annoying because my name starts with at, so it sounds like I've got a stutter, but Atlas TV on Twitter. He's LSXYZ9 still. He's still upset about the fact that he doesn't have the handle at LS, but we're not going to go into it this time because that would be 3 episodes in a row that we've molded about Twitter handles. Which is just not.
She just didn't sell it to me.
Yep, she didn't. She really didn't sell it to him. So on that note, good night, everyone, and we will see you for episode 4 in a couple of weeks. Wow, wow, wow.